Hey, this is John from 95.9 The Fox. Thank you for downloading or streaming or however you're doing it. Thank you for listening to Fairfield County Live and Local. A quick note before this episode gets started. This was recorded like a month ago, way before this whole corona crazy thing started going down. It was a much happier time. So throughout the course of this discussion that I have with Pete Francis, you're not going to hear any mention of coronavirus. It's not because we're the two most oblivious human beings on the face of the earth. It's just because this wasn't a thing when we recorded it just a few weeks ago. That being said, I hope you enjoy this break from the corona craziness. I hope that you are staying safe and healthy. And thank you once again for listening to Fairfield County Live and Local. This is the first episode, man, so I'm excited for it, too. Thank you to Pete Francis for coming in. And without further ado, here we go.
From reading a little bit.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, and just from just the way you... Well, here, let's...
You want
to
get into it?
Yeah, yeah, let's save it for
let's
the
save
thing.
It for...
Because yeah. I am. I'm excited to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here, let me get my... All right. So, yeah. So, it's Fairfield County Live and Local, brought to you by 95.9 The Fox. My name's John. And I'm here... My guest is... He's a singer-songwriter. You would probably most recognize him from the band Dispatch, but also 10, I want to say, solo albums now later.
Yeah, I think...
Or eight and an EP.
Yeah.
I guess we'll call the latest one an EP.
Yep.
But yeah, Pete Francis is here. Fairfield County native. Really glad to have you, man.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, dude.
It's great to be here.
So, and there's a million things that I want to, like, that I want to ask you about, but most of it's going to really, I think, revolve around the work that you've done since kind of reestablishing yourself back here in Fairfield County. I've seen you over the last couple of years just around even the local music scene to the point where, like, me and some of the other guys who've been, like, frequenting there, be like, is that Pete Francis from Dispatch right over there? He's just hanging out. So, but before we get into all of that, where did, you know, how and when did you discover music? What's your earliest musical memory?
Well, there was a lot of music in the house. Yeah. And my mom is from Sweden, and she plays guitar, piano, and sings. I think she actually took a ship over from Stockholm to New York in like 1961, and she took her guitar
nice.
With her. So that, you know, she would play, and then I'm the youngest of four.
Sure.
And a lot of music in the house. My, you know, whether it was James Brown or Creedence or Joni Mitchell or Pink Floyd, you know, there was so much for me to absorb. And we had a lot of records, a lot of vinyl.
Yeah.
My sister's 12 years older than me, so, you know, she had looking at those records. And one of my earliest memories is with T for the Tillerman, the Cat Stevens record, which
yeah.
is just such a beautiful record with, you know, his lyrics and his delivery. So that those were really some of these kind of profound musical and maybe lyrical moments early in life.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned, you know, having a sister 12 years older. So you have not only a multi-generational perspective on music from your parents, obviously being the older generation, but your sister is really, because I'm that, like, I have younger brothers who are 15 and 16 years younger than me.
Oh, really?
That's yeah. a completely different generation
yeah.
within a family. So you've got this kind of three generations of music coming down and influencing you.
Exactly.
At the time. Yeah.
yeah.
No, right on. Right on. And what about, like, when did you first decide, okay, well, this is something I'm going to try to go, like, do? When did you pick up an instrument for the first time?
It's funny, man, because you remember that Chris Isaac song, you know, where he's rolling around on the beach with that babe and, you know.
isn't that every Chris Isaac song?
he's a lucky guy.
Yeah. I remember the music video.
Like, I want to fall in love with, you know, and I remember being sort of a younger kid and trying to sing that to my parents and them
yeah.
kind of giving me a sideways look like, but that was a like early moment of trying to sing.
Yeah.
I went to Brunswick School in Greenwich and I did the men or boys chorus
mm-hmm.
and I just loved being together with the guys and going and singing, you know. What shall we do with the drunken sailor?
Yeah.
What, you know?
Like, yeah.
But we just, singing, like in those early memories, was just really fun. But early memories of me playing was actually with the tape recorder.
Okay.
And playing a song or something, maybe a cover or something I made up. And then like putting it on the stereo and listening to it and getting really excited about just that.
That's so gutsy. I'm so, like, as someone who's always kind of struggled with their own singing voice, I always focus more on the instrument. Me, I know that if I sat down and recorded myself singing, I could probably improve so much. I'm terrified to do it. So I'm impressed that you were able to just sit there and be like, okay.
Well, it may sound impressive to you, but I was not in tune and
no, but that's what I'm saying, though. Just the ability to like swallow your pride and be like, oh, this is terrible, but I can fix it a little bit here and a little bit there, and eventually it's going to get to something.
You know, I think that's part of the process. I mean, if you're out on the field and playing soccer and getting down on yourself for a certain kick, it's like you got to get out there, you know, keep playing.
Makes sense, yeah. So was this, at this point, were you like accompanying yourself on guitar, or was it just like playing the track in the background? Or
It was a little bit of both. I might play something or out of friends. You know, I was playing in high school bands and maybe 15 or 16 trying to front. You know, I remember being in my friend's basement and trying to sing like Southbound by the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of... Allman Brothers really hit me early, 15, 14. Just, you remember that Dreams compilation that came out and had the four CDs? And like, when I heard all those songs of Melissa and Blue Sky, and that was that kind of bluesy, you know, rock that I just fell in love with. So, yeah, those were a lot of early memories of, I mean, really getting out there, and I guess... you know, cutting my teeth, you know, with that.
I love that you bring up the Allman Brothers, because it was not the Dreams compilation, but it was the Best of 69 to 79 that really was a big eye-opener. I already played at that point, but that switched the direction of my playing very, very specifically.
It has that ability to kind of this major blues and minor blues, so, and I know you play guitar, so within that is really... On a side note, I was at the B.B. King tribute at the Capitol last night.
I saw that on your Instagram. How was that?
Well, the Capitol Theater, have you been there?
Yes,
it's so beautiful. Every time I go, I just think it's a treat.
Yeah, and Garcia's afterward is always a good time, too.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and John Scofield stepped up. He's one of my favorites. David Hidalgo, I think that's how you pronounce it, of Los Lobos. I mean... you have some of these blues masters, and then the band itself, you have B.B. King's drummer.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, and Lucille, the actual Lucille was on stage.
I saw, you know what? Was it your video of that kid, Catfish, what's his name, Christopher?
Oh, Kingfish?
Yeah, Kingfish, that's it, playing
kid.
Lucille. He's nuts, man.
He can play.
He's got it.
He can play.
Wow. He's got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, that, you know... in terms of early music, I think I was definitely turned on by that, you know, blues, Allman Brothers, Hendrix, of course. And those were sort of my, and I don't know about you, but, you know, 91, the Blood Sugar
Sex
came
Magic,
out. And then I think everybody was like, Frusciante and his beautiful guitar playing. So all of these... it was funny. My brother, older brother, Leif, was a bass player.
Yeah.
And that was probably part of the reason that I wanted to be in a band. I saw him play at the Capitol before it was fixed up.
Sure.
And his band opened up for the Wailers at the Cap. And I think I was just floored to see my bro up there.
Yeah.
And being like, you know, that band thing's kind of cool, you know.
And this was how old at this point?
Well, I think I was 13 or 14 when I saw him there.
That's the age, dude.
Yeah.
That's when it really hooks you.
And yeah, you know, when you see that rock and roll thing at that age, you know, there's, of course, rebellion and this sort of inner angst and getting that out, which I think we can all relate to.
Yeah. I mean, anybody, it's almost like you want to feel that way when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, the music... the music helps helps you not only like have an excuse to feel that way, but also process that.
Exactly.
Process the
process the
usually
the
self-inflicted
inner turmoil.
But yeah. So in that, and it's funny because you're listing all the references and, you know, the Allman Brothers with the Hendrix, and then of course just that little bit of you know, that funk influence of Blood Sugar coming out, and of course you referenced James Brown as mm-hmm. an early mm-hmm. And I'm hearing things like the riff for Bang Bang in my head, and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to see where that's kind of coming from. You've got those Hendrix double stops,
yes, yep.
in the beginning, you know, working very much over the major pentatonic.
Exactly. Yeah, that is, you know, those, it's funny, those chords or those grooves where you're sort of sitting on an E chord and playing that, and really in that song just a couple changes, I think sometimes where a song can be really successful, because lyrically, and it's fun. And I was thinking about this coming up here, and even if you look at a songwriter like Bob Marley, you know, how he makes it so simple, but it's profound, and the everything is so beautiful. But if you or I to pick up the guitar, you can do it in four chords,
right.
You know, which is a lot to be said about that.
Well, it's like, and to speaking of James Brown, it's like how he says every instrument is a drum. Like,
yeah.
You know, that thing, like, yeah. What is it? What is that, Maceo? It's a saxophone. No, it's not. What is it? It's a drum.
Right.
So it doesn't have to, the individual parts don't have to be complex. They don't have to be crazy. They don't have to be over the top. They all just have to work together. And even if they're not doing a lot, if they all work together and they all hit at the right time and at the same time, then you're serving the song.
Yes.
Instead of serving yourself,
yeah.
Just as a musician. Because everybody likes to widdly
yeah.
over the big thing. But
I think you just nailed a major part of it, you know. I read an Oscar Peterson quote where he was basically saying that the group sound is the most important, and that you have to know all of the instruments as well as your own.
Yeah.
Maybe in the sense that you can't play them, but I think as a kid, I've always, whether I just stood next to the drummer, or I've just been very inquisitive with musicians,
yeah.
And I've always wanted to know how to do that, and even be like, can I take a lesson with you and try to learn? Because there's this thing with magic, I think, that happens, that I think people...
There's a frequency.
Know what I mean? There's a frequency.
And it's easier to access
yeah.
that when you know what that guy's doing.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's good. No, it is. It's good to be able to walk around at band practice and be able to do something. Even if it's just like,
just
even if it's just
know
like,
what
you know,
they're doing, you know,
yeah, like just, you know,
I mean, I'll never
smoke
know
on the water, like, right. You know, whole tones. Just, you
I'll never know what the trumpet guy is doing or how the heck
that
he
instrument
plays
is
that.
An absolute mystery to me. It looks so hard.
It looks. I was watching so the guy difficult. Last night. I'm like, if that was me, it would be a disaster.
Yeah. But no, I think that kind of cohesion is good, which I mean, honestly, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about Dispatch because you talked about, there's so many people who have really dug into that more than me. But one thing that pops out to me just about the way you guys played, but also just about the way you guys marketed yourself, because like these days you've got SoundCloud rappers, you've got YouTube sensations, what's his name, Shawn Mendes gets discovered on Vine, Justin Bieber, the first big YouTube star.
Right, right.
So, you know, and those guys ended up getting signed by labels, so it's kind of besides my point, but you guys did that before there was any of that, like before it was cool. This was pre-YouTube, this was pre-social media, a little bit of MySpace, but, you know, outside of that, it was, I guess my question is how... did you guys manage to be independent, to grow this following, and then to follow up and stay independent?
Yeah.
For as long as you did, how did you do that? And also, what was that decision making process once you'd found success?
Right.
Because it must have been so much hard. This is 96 that you guys are all.
Yeah, we started working together in 95.
Yeah.
And man, you know, obviously none of those social media, email. I know it sounds like the dinosaur age, but it, I mean,
that was
not around, man. We were, you know, going to the photocopy machine and printing, you know, things and taping them on people's doors. Yeah. You know, that was the beginning. But I really think what it was about was the beauty of starting a band. And if you go to the basics, it's kind of like, what instruments? Yeah. What do we need? You know, Chad knew a dude that had a bass and it was lying in the basement. And he gave it to us for $40. We had to take it to the music store to make sure the pickups were working. Mm-hmm. We put it on. My friend Jason gave me his silver drum kit that he wasn't using. So we really put it together. We put it in the back of the Volvo. And it was, you know, I know the expression now is grassroots, but I don't even think we were saying that word then. We were saying, where's our next gig? And it was really about kind of person-to-person contact.
Yeah.
Even in the sense the way you reached out to me and coming up here, it was really about people. And, his younger brother goes to Princeton and they can get us a gig.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of those gigs started, with kind of people hearing it. And obviously in those days, it was about CDs and selling them and a few T-shirts.
Well, and then I got to imagine file sharing had to come into it, because I think that was how I first discovered you
guys. Guess I tell this story whenever I talk to people about the Napster thing, because if you look at this story, Napster comes along. Even to this day, I never went on Napster. Mm-hmm. It was out there. People say, they said, we're trading your songs. And I see my friend, he's got that. So we traded. So it was a whole thing, you know. And one of the concerts that happened was we got an invitation to play at Pomona College in California.
Yeah.
Never been there. Okay. So you got to remember, no radio.
Yeah.
No publicist. No agent.
No website, right? I
mean, no website, yeah.
Yeah.
1,000 people showed up to a Halloween show.
Wow.
Based on those sharing. And
this is for those of you who don't know, and this is, you guys are still in Middlebury now, right? You're in Vermont.
We're kind of Middlebury, and we were on our way out of school and then starting to take this thing more seriously and doing more gigs.
But so, I mean, just to my point, this is Vermont, or just New England in general, to California, the exact opposite side of the country, no modern communication.
Right.
No nothing, and you've got, and you're drawing 1,000 at Pomona in California.
Smoke signals.
Right. Just hit the...
That was a crazy time, and... We went to D.C. and all of a sudden there's this hearing. I mean, here we were like, what's going on? You know, these big bands, Metallica, and they want to destroy Napster. And we met this guy, Sean Fanning, with Napster. He's so nice. He's so cool. Mm-hmm. Then you got Chuck D kind of fist bumping us, saying, you guys rock. And we're like, that's Chuck D. He's like telling us that we rock. I mean, so we were... We couldn't believe it. I mean, in many ways, people might say, "Oh, you know, you know, you're right place, right time," and that may be true. But we definitely put the work in as a band to be ready for it.
So it looks like we've been joined by Jay Swag.
Let's get our buddy Jay.
Get him in here. All right, hold on. And so we're being joined now by Pete's compatriot and a good friend of mine, the man himself, John Shake, J Swag General.
Johnny Shake, Swaggy.
Shalom.
Good to see you.
But so, all right, so to go back to your point, so you were one of those bands that really kind of hit at a time when Napster and file sharing was nothing but advantageous for your career. It was the only way to send up that smoke signal, to use the phrase.
Yeah, it was a really cool moment because something was happening in music that nobody really was prepared for.
Right.
And I got to say, it felt a little, you know, like pirates on this, you know, coming across and doing dangerous stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was cool, you know, and we felt that, I think we liked that energy, and it built. Now, to kind of follow up your second question, in terms of record label thing.
And just to remind, so this now you're talking about the decision to remain independent, because all offers must have been coming in.
There were different offers, and we were even thinking of signing a deal. And it was funny; it was like right before the deal's inked, boom, it fell through.
Really,
didn't happen.
Okay,
but yeah, to get with the three of us, I think we've always had a hard time making a collective decision.
Okay,
together, and that was frankly probably part of the reason we never signed.
Was it? And this is just kind of an aside, but just when you say that, does that extend musically as well, or was that just in a business sense?
It was definitely musically as well, in our whole friendship and relationship. But you know, I think at that same time, where things could be a bit confusing or convoluted, there was a spark that existed, with the three of us and the band and the music we were making, and I think people felt that.
Right. Well, I mean, clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you, like, you know, me being, you know, it, like I said, a guitar player at the age I am, like, if you're in or around your 30s, like, that you guys were the high school and college sound that was going around. That was the cool thing because, you know, like 2005 is when I entered college, and that was, you know, right at the peak of, you know, MySpace, social media, you know, Facebook just getting started, file sharing still being a huge thing. And it's, who are you listening to? Oh, well, how about this indie band? What about this independent band? No, this is Dispatch. Or you don't know about them? Well, that's just because you listen to all of the, like, sellout bands. I listen to these, you know, awesome guys over here. This was even 4 years after you guys went on hiatus.
Yes.
That this really still was such a big thing.
I think it was.
And learning your songs and trying to impress girls and doors.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
if you get that general lick or that bang bang and two coins.
Dude, I play the hell out of two coins. I'll tell you that right now.
Of course. Yeah, man. At that time, there were some really exciting things going on. So that, you know, I wanted to talk about that concert in 2004 at the Hat Shell, which still remains, to me, to be my favorite Dispatch concert.
Yeah.
Because I guess it was free.
Right.
And if you think of Woodstock and some of these things, those people got in there. And it became essentially free. I mean, some people might have paid, but, you know, 500,000 people came to Woodstock, you know, and 110,000 people came to the Hat Shell. And, you know, at about 10 or 11 in the morning, there were 70,000 people there. And the highway, Storrow Drive, was full.
Well, that was a theme, though, of your career with that band, though, was free. I mean,
I think just
from, like, the success of file sharing, and then even I remember going onto your website and being like, are you serious? I've got the entire catalog, everything, the live stuff, too, and it's all just right there whenever I feel like listening to it. That was always, I think that was something that people connected to.
I think that it's very interesting, even in the time we are right now, what is the value of a song? Who's making the money off of it?
Yeah.
Is it not the artists, or is it the conglomerate that's created this thing, whether it's Apple or Spotify? So just to come back to this point about the music being free, I think that just is something that people can join in on and feel a sense of community with. And I believe that day just personified that.
Yeah. Oh, that's great, man. And I mean, you know, here I am. I said I didn't want to talk too much about Dispatch. We did 10 minutes on it.
That's okay.
I mean, it really is the stuff that came afterward that kind of that interested me. So, I mean, you've got this EP out right now.
Yeah.
And it's your, and we couldn't even come up with a number, 8 to 10, something like
something,
that. Summer EP, summer
there.
Full albums.
Yep.
Solo release. But when I say solo release, it almost kind of belies the true nature of what you seem to be all about, which is collaboration. Because you've got, and you had, you know, all those albums with Craig Dreyer.
Yes.
Am I saying that right?
Craig Dreyer.
Dreyer, yeah. And even the title of this EP belonged to the band, and the song itself, and the decision to shoot the video in New Orleans. It seems like it's a solo album, but it's really kind of a love letter almost a little bit to the idea of playing music with people and creating that community that you were talking about just now. And sorry, there's a question in there somewhere. I swear to God. What I'm saying is how does viewing yourself as a solo artist, but also inviting collaboration into the process, how does that affect you and your music?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks, because I think you nailed it, you know. About the belong to the band. My friend Ovid played me. We were up in Maine spinning vinyl, and he put on this Reverend Gary Davis record.
Yeah.
And hallelujah, hallelujah, I belong to the band. And I heard it, and I just thought, I resonated with that so much because...
So that's where that sample came from, too. I wanted to ask if that was a sample.
Yeah, it came from Reverend Gary Davis, and if people don't know him, he's a wonderful guy to check out. His guitar playing was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a guy who was a reverend up in Harlem, and I know a lot of singer-songwriters, guitarists would go to him to take lessons because he played guitar almost the way someone plays piano. But really, the sentiment there is... Yeah, I think you nailed it, because a collaboration to me is maybe my single most favorite part of being a musician, because I think that things get better and they're more sophisticated when you begin to look at them from other points of view. And as you were mentioning earlier, the tendency for the artist is to say, "Hey, it's me. It's, you know, back off. You know, this is me." And I get that, because I've been there too. But when you start to open up a little bit, and the other thing is, if you surround yourself with talented individuals and then people that are your friends, you'd be kind of amazed at what you can come up with.
Well, that's what everyone tells you, especially when you first start an instrument, right, is play with other people. You will never get as good as you are when you play with somebody else.
Yeah.
It just brings something out of you.
And it's funny, too. I don't know if you ever... you know, play some instruments with children. But if you're playing with a couple of people that are musicians and then they begin to play, everything that they're doing is perfect because you're in their rhythm and you know, as opposed to be like, "Hey, little Johnny, you know, play." And they're like, "Nah," you know what I mean? So like you create this vibe.
Having to play.
So, yeah, you know, that's one of the major reasons why I love it. And you know, talking about jazz and that period from the 50s, you know, that 10-year period of 1950, 1960, those musicians, I think, were very much in touch with that, you know, and Miles Davis with Kind of Blue and putting together these extraordinary musicians with ideas and then creating something in a first or second take has been sort of an ethos of mine that I love in my writing as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the square definition of jazz is improvisational music, right?
Yeah.
You can't have improvisation. I guess that's a misnomer. I guess you can, but it's not as fun to have improvisation without other people present. You know what I mean? Part of improvisation is playing off of somebody else.
That's a good point.
You have to have the B to the A to really kind of, you know, to make that all work.
Exactly. And maybe even if it's not jazz, you know, here are the three chords. We're going to jam. Jay Swags has got some rhythms and some rhymes.
That's right.
He's gonna, perhaps.
Swag, jump in here, by the way.
He's going to lay down.
Shalom, how art thou?
We're good. But, all right, man. Well, so I did, though. I enjoyed listening to the EP, too. What struck me was the first song I heard about it was the one that you sent me, which was Show Me. And then listening to it, I was like, I was surprised that Show Me was the song that you sent. Like, hey, put this one out there. Because you've got, I mean, like Fire. You know, very, very upbeat, funky kind of tune. You would think, like, okay, well, let's get
I was thinking about that, and you could put another one on, I guess.
You know, we'll put a variety on, but I liked your decision to send me the ballad first. I liked your decision to send that instead of the fun upbeat one, and then okay, now we'll sneak in Now we'll sneak in the whole thing. And I don't know, maybe it was a split second decision, but like explain that thought process to me of like, no, I think I'm gonna send them this one.
Well, it's interesting. I think out of the six songs on that record, I'm probably most proud of that song.
Yeah.
And I like the lyric. It's an example of essentially three chords. But I think it, you know, the idea of show me where my heart is, I think that often we as human beings are sort of looking to find that center again of where we truly are as our being. So I think that idea resonated with me, and that was one of the early songs I wrote and collaborated with Tim Randolph on. And you know, I'm really happy with how it came out.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it is, man. It's a beautiful track.
Thank you.
And hopefully I'll work some studio magic and you'll be listening to it underneath this conversation.
There you go. There you go. Studio magic.
But yeah, dude. So, I mean, you know, let's bring it back home as we get to the crux of this, because it's Fairfield County Live and Local after all. You've toured the entire world. You've had a lot of success. You could live anywhere, I would imagine, but you choose to kind of to use this as your home base. Now, obviously, New York City's right there. I mean, it's not like you're not isolating yourself, but why the decision to stay in Fairfield County? What is it that you love about Fairfield County that kind of makes you gravitate towards staying here?
Yeah, I grew up in Riverside, which is a part of Greenwich, but kind of Riverside and Old Greenwich have their own character.
Yep.
I think there's sort of a simplicity to it. I love the beach there. I loved growing up. So my wife, Katie, and our son, Charlie, who's 9, and Calliope, who's 7.
That's a beautiful name.
Thank you. I think that there's just, I don't know, you know, I think a sense of beach. And you know, I don't know if I've been to L.A., I've been to Nashville, and, you know, it's fun to visit. But I guess I come home and I like Connecticut, you know, and it's kind of funny just to talk about Connecticut, because I think what probably Swaggy and I see a lot when we go out to venues are great musicians.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
Really, really great musicians.
Absolutely.
And I would say, look, man, that could be in the city, could be in, you know, there's, you know, their cats in Bridgeport and Sonia and
Black Rock. They,
I mean, they're black. You know, there's
absolutely right. Black
that's
Rock.
Right. Yeah,
that's right. And anybody who's listening to this who knows me know that I'm like a Black Rock ride or die. So it's
the acoustic is so fun to play.
It's absolutely. So much fun, dude. It is. It's true. And you know. And kudos to you, too, for kind of bringing people, for bringing some of that talent. I remember Gathering of the Vibes. You got Darian up there. You got the whole Funky Dogs up there. And then you brought Tommy Weeks and company to play with you at Madison Square Garden. And that was a cool moment just for the community. We're just like, oh, yeah, those guys march up and down at like Black Rock Mardi Gras. I love those guys.
Yeah, I think they're great guys. They're a great band. You know, Tim Palmieri is a buddy of mine,
Absolute
Kung
monster.
Fu. He's just a wonderful guitarist. You mentioned Darian, who's extraordinary.
Darian Cunning, by the way, check him out.
And what was that? Let's see. You said Funky Dogs. I'm trying to think of any other.
I think I just called Tommy out by name.
Tommy,
I know
Tommy.
Yeah. He's a buddy of mine.
But just to touch on Dragon Crest Collective, because people may be wondering.
Well, and that's where I was going with this whole thing. So sorry. Yeah. Introduce, because you've got now this collective of musicians and artists and things like that, all based out of this area, Fairfield County, maybe a little Westchester County too, that you're kind of putting together. And you can explain it better than I can. So go ahead.
No. I think that this whole thing is sort of bigger than the Pete Francis entity, and this is Dragon Crest Collective. It celebrates the collaborative aspect of music through events and records. And John Shake is here today, and
that's me.
My
What's
buddy,
up,
and goes for J Swag General. But it's just an example of seeing John and rapping and his ideas, and you know, and a lot of these musicians, because sometimes I think this idea of like, are you famous and like, what are you, how many followers you like, some of that it gets a little bit,
My numbers are low.
Yeah, but
so are mine.
It's maybe the numbers are low, but the spirit is high. You know,
yes.
and so
well that's said. The song right there.
That was well said.
But man, you know, we got a good group of people, and we, you know, my wife Katie and I are kind of putting this thing together, and we have this thing called Take One in my studio where we bring musicians in and we film it, put that out. That's kind of coming up. I'm doing lots of recordings. Really good singer songwriter Mosa. We just did a song that I wrote with a friend, and she sang it. I hadn't done that before, where it was a song I wrote, seeing somebody sing it. And then with Swag over here on my left, you know, this idea of coming up or performing makes the show kind of exciting. And I go back to like Parliament Funkadelic, and George Clinton would create these wild performances with horns and this, and then some guys do it, and like
Mr. Nose. I love that.
I think that's
it's fun.
Well, and Swag, you do light up every stage you step on. So you've sat in with me on numerous different iterations of various bands that I've been in the past, and as well. But I like the kind of dichotomy of having both of you sitting next to each other, because you've got kind of this like folk rock, you know, hero of, you know, that everybody, at least of my generation, kind of has at least a little bit of a story behind the music that you've created. And then we've got hip hop, just pure hip hop over here with John. So I guess the point I'm trying to make with that is Dragon Crest Collective is really, it's not about, oh, you play like me, so come hang out. It's about, you don't play like me. Let's see what we can create there.
Right. Well, maybe don't or do a little bit like me, but I hear your point of what are we going to do? And you know, I think it extends a little beyond music. I'm not sure if you know about Mike's Organic in Stamford. It's a cool farm to table grocery, but you know, Mike, they cook there, they do that. And so last summer we did an event there, and it was super cool because it was in this warehouse space in Stamford.
Yeah.
So people should be on the lookout for a Dragon Crest show this summer. And again, here it is, cooks and people that are bringing wine or whatever. And it's a party, you know?
It sounds like a party.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's all about creating with other people and vibing off their good energy. And, you know, it's synergistic, and there's nothing better.
Yep.
No judgment, no fear, right?
That's
the tagline.
Yeah.
That's the tagline right there. So, all right, man. So I guess the last thing I want to ask is just what's next? What's next for you?
Well, that's a good question. I think that I'm...
Although we might have just answered it with Dragon Crest, because I know, like, I went on to DragonCrestCollective.com, and it was just like this very nice, ominous coming soon.
Yeah, right.
And
we were working on one side.
I want to know things.
I know that. I think it's a lot of cool stuff. I don't feel like I need to be pinned down in one certain genre or anything. Like, I'm a lover of all music and a lover of what musicians and artists bring. And so I'm not really interested in putting people into categories or anything like that. I want to see what happens and what we can create together. And I think that's sort of the focus of Dragon Crest. And with my thing, you know, we have a show on March 20th at the Woodbury Brewery Company.
Nice.
And I don't know if you've been there or other folks have been there, but
it's great.
They're very cool people there. The beer is tasty. And they really have a beautiful stage, and they celebrate music.
And is that going to be you playing? You bringing the band? You got some other acts coming up there?
Yeah, but got
under the heading of Dragon
Crest?
Yeah,
kind of this Pete Francis Presents Evening with Dragon Crest Collective. Nice. So cool band, some buddies of mine, Ronald Reggae, another in the
that's awesome.
Connecticut.
That's tear down so that wall.
Awesome.
And they are
tear down that wall.
Yeah, they're tearing down all sorts of walls.
That's right.
With their grooves.
Absolutely.
They got this whole thing. Grateful Dead meets the band, meets Jan, like Jerry. It's a cool band. They came out, did a take one at my studio. So they're on the bill, and the Funky Dogs Brass Band
yes.
is on the bill.
Love the Dogs.
And then I'm bringing Craig Dreyer, one of the biggest monsters of the saxophone, and also is nasty on the keys. Jason Farr on the drums, Bobby Paulings, Bobby Bananas on bass, and the one and only P-Mad, Paul Madison
oh, Jesus.
On guitar. And, yeah, yeah. And I'm sure that swag will drift in and just be parachute down onto stage. I'm not sure.
Well, that you is do, apropos.
You do. I was going to say, you kind of drifted in here, so I'm loving it. This is great.
Yeah, my father was a paratrooper, so maybe he could teach me a couple things.
It's in the genes.
Oh, you told
it's
me genetic. You jumped out of a tree with a sheet one time, right?
Yeah, that didn't work out so well. But hey, it's all about giving it a go.
Yeah, it's all about giving it a go. Pete, thank you, man.
Thank you, John.
This was great.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, man. And, make sure you check out Dragon Crest Collective. Make sure you check out Pete Francis. The EP is out right now. We spent 10 minutes talking about it.
Belong to the band.
I wanted to say bound to the band,
bound.
Which I guess would, I don't know what it
bound.
Sorry. Yes, that's right. The EP, Bound to the Band, on iTunes right now. Dude, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, John.
This is Fairfield County Live and Local, powered by 95.9 The Fox. I'm John.